Professor Dugin, we're filming this in the middle of, you know, the Schrodinger's ceasefire between Iran and Israel, where we've seen statements from a bunch of different sources where there is supposedly a ceasefire, but then there's reports of missiles being launched. So we really don't know what's going on. And given that, I want to start by having a less news-centric question and more of a reflective question. This conflict has been going on for 12 days, and it could be very well going on for more than 12 days. What conclusions can we draw from the war so far? And more fundamentally, do you believe that a sustainable peace between Israel and Iran is possible?
First of all, I will begin from the last part of the question. So I'm absolutely sure that no sustainable peace is possible between Iran and Israel so far. So we are in the middle of the big changes and the balance of power in the Middle East in general. So I don't think that the third world war that just began and just has ended already, as it seems. I don't think that that is two events that we could compare. So you can easily start third world war, but it is very difficult, very hard to stop it. So I think we are inside of the World War III. And that means that nobody has won in so far in the conflict between Israel and Iran. And America was as well involved in that. United States of America has bombed Iran without any consensus in inner politics, in domestic politics, without any law on international levels. So that was act of aggression. So America has entered in the war with Iran. Now Trump declared that it's over. So, but it is not over at all. So it just illusion. So I think that the big conflict has started and didn't end so far. Second point, I think that very important element of that is the strike directed against nuclear facilities, against nuclear objects. So that is a radical violation of the previous red lines based on the mutual recognition that we should avoid at any price any direct strikes against nuclear objects. So that is nuclear war, precisely. We are going through normalization of the nuclear factor. So the humanity now starts to accept the possibility of the nuclear explosion, or the dirty bomb, or direct use of the nuclear weapon, or either by Israel against Iran, or by Iran or Pakistan against Israel, or by United States in the general against its enemies, or the retaliation from the other. So nuclear war is already started, has already started. So it is not just the possibility. It is something already here. And I like your comparison with Schrodinger situation. That is not just the moment we're speaking in. That is much more broad concept we need to apply to new kind of war. So it is not the war of the something actual. It is or it isn't. It is not a logical war. Peace and war, that is new kind of war, where is the war of based on the principle of quantum mechanics of indefiniteness. So it is probably yes or probably not. That is about theory of probability. It is not about surety. Nobody can be sure that it's still going on or it has stopped. So we are living in a quantum mechanics world order where we need to apply to the analysis new instruments, new tools. So that is quantum geopolitics, Schrödinger concept, and we should act in that situation, basing not on the sure and certain facts, because there are no more and no certain facts. All sides use their own narratives, and they correspond not only to the fixation of what is going on in the reality, but all sides desire. They put in the same narrative what is the reality and the will and the desire and the passion and the emotion, and they provoke imagination, and that is not a normal situation when there is the reality and its reflection. That is postmodern way of war, where everything is so interconnected, intertwined, that we need new tools of analysis. We could not say the war has ended. The war still is continuing. Both affirmations are wrong. So that is the quantum condition where you are not sure about anything. You could not say for sure neither one thing nor the opposite. I think this volatility, the kind of volatility and the kind of this quantum geopolitical condition, a state of the global system. So I think nothing stable, sustainable. So everything about all the discourses about the sustainability, something sustainable, something permanent, something certain, they are out of question. Nothing is certain, nothing is sustainable, and it seems that the situation will be worse and worse in the future. So I think we have passed already the situation when we could speak about order, world order, international order. There is no more order. There's something new, quantum order. That is not just pure chaos, because there are some force lines inside, but there is not normal classical understanding of war and peace.
Yeah, so I mean, I guess, I think that a lot of people are used to getting this sort of clarity, and what you're saying is that even if we have a formal ceasefire, right, like we had, for example, between Israel and Hezbollah in Lebanon, we still see Israel bombing southern Lebanon on a regular basis. So these sort of traditional understandings of war, peace, no one makes declarations of war anymore, and no one formally recognizes ceasefires anymore.
Exactly. You say peace and you bomb. You say we have stopped the war and you kill. So that is, but the same, the Iranian part responds with the same attitude. For example, I have heard a recent declaration of Araghchi, the Minister of Foreign Affairs of Iran. He has said, we have agreed about ceasefire, but ceasefire is not ceasefire. So it is not just on the Western side there is quantum discourse, on the Iranian side as well. So nobody, how we could interpret that ceasefire is not ceasefire? So either it is ceasefire or not. But this declaration is a kind of quantum declaration. So that is about, as you have said, the Schrodinger's cat. Ceasefire. So maybe so, maybe so. You never know, because there comes some missile that hits, for example, Israel, and nobody take responsibility. There is hit, or maybe not. There is missile, or maybe not. And there is no ceasefire anymore. And blame Iran. Those who are against Iran, they blame Iran. Iran blames Zionists, Zionists blame Muslims, Muslims blame everybody else. So that is how all the mess continues, not begins, because that has already begun.
You know, listening to this is very interesting, because when we talk about postmodernism, we usually think of, you know, crazy people on American college campuses with blue hair, saying that there is, 500 different genders, right? That there is no such thing as a man or a woman. Anyone can be a man or a woman. But here we sort of see what you essentially described as this sort of postmodern approach to warfare, where there is no clarity, there are no clearly set rules, and everything is up for grabs. How did postmodernism manage to even infiltrate foreign policy in war?
So interesting. You're asking very good question. So I have discovered the growing interest for postmodern philosophy starting from the beginning of the 90s in American armed forces. So that was called network warfare, and the texts and books dedicated to the network warfare were and are full of the direct appeals to postmodern philosophy. So the idea to act in the fragmented groups, not the traditional, for example, order, command, and fulfillment model, master-slave model, no more. There is new understanding of shared awareness. When the commander doesn't give direct order to the subalterns, so commander just express his vague wish. So it would be very nice to keep this mountain or this field or this place or this small city or big city under our control. But it is not the order to attack. It is just wish or desire or just image. And the subalterns, they don't receive the direct order, but they should to interpret correctly commander's desire, commander's intent. So that gives the huge possibility to adapt to the situation. For example, if there is the order to attack, they obey, and that's all. So, but if there is just intent, commander's intent, you try to be more subtle dealing with the enemy. The other elements, the control of informational field, so you should have all wallet information for yourself and keep it safe, and disinform the enemy. So the part of the network warfare is as well this postmodern concept that texts or language is everything. So reality is nothing, the language is everything. If you control the discourse, the text, the informational currents, you control the mind of the enemy and of the friends, of neutral. But so that is postmodern vision of war was embedded in American strategy from the that was created the department in Pentagon dedicated totally to develop network warfare that started more than 30 years ago. So it is something that is already accepted, but it it is not just secret. So we could read the book, the textbook on network warfare. That network warfare that is based on the postmodern principles, and I think that we just years of delay of understanding what is going on. So the, our modern war is not anymore modern, it's postmodern. For example, the using of drones, artificial intelligence, information, lies. It seems to be something like old age strategy of Sun Tzu, but it is not just continuation of traditional strategy. That is postmodernity embedded in the all elements of modern war. So I think we need to rediscover our analysis in order to interpret correctly what is going on. So that is quantum mechanics rules, Copenhagen interpretation, that is much more valid than traditional Clausewitz or other texts. They conserve some elements of the reality, but more and more the traditional strategy is replaced by this postmodern attitude. So postmodernism is much more important than just some perversions legalized in the campuses or modern artists. So it is metaphysical approach to the reality that is based on new principles than we are acquainted with normally. So we need to understand new words. We should study what postmodernism is.
Does Trump pursue a postmodernist foreign policy?
I think yes. I think yes. That is clear example. What is postmodernism? So he in network warfare and in postmodernism, one of the main principle is acceleration or dromocracy. That is the rule or power of the speed, dromocracy. So Paul Virilio has written the book on that. So what is the dromocracy? What is the power of the speed? So if you make something very quickly, so you could make a failure or mistake. But if you do it very, very, very quickly, you have the time to improve that. If you try to get the right strike, right blow, you measure your resources, you adjust all the situation, you could be you could arrive to the crucial moment too late. So you could, so that is important, the speed, dromocracy, and acceleration. I think that is one of the principle of the postmodern philosophy, and Trump demonstrates the example of it. He makes very quickly radical affirmations. He revokes them immediately in 5 minutes. He affirms quite opposite. And it is not about long strategy. It is a short narrative, is cut narrative. So it is the product to cut the big narrative in the small parts and manipulate them to put as well to play with the time, because in the classical period there was a consequence first. gas one thing, after that next thing, a logical result of this consequence. And now the future and the past are intermingled. They are confused. That is the other element and principle of postmodern philosophy. And Trump is good, very good example of what is postmodern politics inside United States and outside. He is a surfer. He's on the wave, and when the wave come down, he just try to get to the other wave. No important ideology, no important consequences. So he just adjust to the situation in order to be on the wave. So now he's on the neocons wave. Before he was on MAGA wave, pro-Israel wave, anti-Israel wave. He could be on peace wave, on war wave, and he doesn't care about this stone age consequences. So everything is going in through social or on Twitter. On the networks, that is network warfare, where, for example, bloggers' remark could change the history of the world. One unknown or blogger without any serious influence over global affairs could change anything. That is a effect of synchronicity. That is quantum mechanic. Postmodernity reflects more quantum mechanics than the classical Newtonian mechanic that dominated the logical analysis and the structures of the modernity.
But is this sort of postmodern approach to foreign policy and warfare, is this a winning strategy? Because you talk about that it sort of rejects the long-term thinking, it rejects consequences, but won't the United States at some point run into long-term consequences and hard, cold realities that it won't be able to escape?
So, I don't think that postmodernity is just fake, just illusion, just refuse to make reality check. So, postmodernism and postmodernity is something very deeper. That is new ontology, where there is no reality. That's all the reality is put in the text. So an artificial intelligence is some tool or new ambience, new form of living, new form of life. That is artificial intelligence. That for artificial intelligence, there is only text. There is no reality. Reality as such doesn't exist. So for artificial intelligence, precisely the postmodern philosophical principle is the main principle of the function. And I think that the hardcore consequences belong to the previous ontology of the modernity. So it is not just the game. It is not just violation of some natural laws. That is about the ontological shift from the real to the virtual. So virtual now is new reality. It is not just reflection or fiction of the reality. So I think that the main idea of postmodernity is to involve humanity into this virtual reality, into the reality of artificial intelligence. And that is obligatory postmodernism. And, for example, who resists that? Russia, Iran, maybe China, but all of us, all the Poles who try to resist to this post-Western, clearly Western postmodernism, we are already partly in the same situation, because we are developing artificial intelligence, we are using drones. We are using digitalization of our economies. So we are in the process of migration to this reality. So that is the singularity moment. So we are living the world we knew, or we thought we knew, and we are migrating in the new reality where there is no any more truth or something radically false. So nothing is true, nothing is false. It is Schrödinger cat ontology. So maybe yes, maybe not. So quantum computer, it is the same idea. LLM model, large language model of AI, it is the same idea. Not logical chains is that serve as the basis of the artificial intelligence, but rhetoric. Rhetoric, approximations, or something that is probable, not sure, but probable. So that is probability. That is new law of new reality. Maybe it is reality. Maybe it is fake. Nobody knows. Nobody cares. And nobody cares. And finally, the distinction will disappear. That is idea. So that is migration to the new ontology, and that is not so impossible. It could look because we already made something very similar from the traditional society to the modern society. We have overturned the sacred traditional values, and we have replaced them by totally new understanding of time, being, humanity, death, God, and so on in the beginning of the modernity. Now we are living in the end of the modernity, and the new passages, second passages, first passage was from the tradition to the modernity, and now from modernity to the postmodernity. And in all these passages, the being is changed. Not just our reflection of it, but being itself, ontologies are changed. And we don't pay enough attention to that, but this process we could not just discard to say, oh, it is just philosophical game. It's just about playing. It is unbased declaration. No, that's something more. That is a very important shift, ontological shift of the whole humanity, and modern or postmodern wars are part of this shift.
So we've had a good deep dive into postmodernism. I want to shift focus back to Israel and Iran, because you've written extensively about how each country's actions can be understood through an ideological prism. Can you elaborate, you know, what sort of ideology is illuminating Netanyahu's Israel? And what ideology is driving the Islamic Republic of Iran, and how these ideologies can help us understand their foreign policy behavior?
So first of all, in order to interpret correctly what Netanyahu does, we need to get a bit deeper the history of Judaism and the very beginning of the modern Israel, because according to the Jewish religion, there was a kind of punishment of God placed on chosen people, and that was the destruction of the Second Temple. And after that, dispersion, diaspora started from that. And that was an important cycle of getting out of the promised land, of losing ancient spiritual motherland. And according to Judaism, the Jerusalem is the axis mundi, that is the axis of the world. So there is the global verticality passed through Holy Land. And all that was lost for Jews, and Jews were dispersed on the earth. And the only when Messiah will come, that was another Messiah, not Jesus Christ, because Judaism is based on the rejection of Jesus Christ and his nature of God and Messiah. Jews don't recognize in Jesus Christ neither Messiah nor God. So it is totally different vision. And according to Judaism, so Messiah should come at the end of time. And one of the main elements of his return, of his appearance, not return, appearance for the first time, that will be a return of the Jews to the promised land. And that will follow the appearance of Messiah. Not it should not be done before he comes. That is normal, traditional Judaic vision. So Messiah comes, the Jews return to the Holy Land with their tradition, and they start to build a third temple in the place where Al-Aqsa is. So that is something common to all traditional Jews. That is religion, that is vision of history. But what Zionists have made, they have affirmed in their religious element that Messiah is on delay. So Messiah is on delay, and it is time and the moment to the Jews themselves to proclaim Messiah. So not to wait anymore, but to start acting as if they are Messiah. And that was the core, metaphysical core of Zionist project of restoration of Israel before Messiah comes. So that was very, very bold metaphysical and religious and mystical affirmation. And the modern Israel was established without Messiah. But the idea is that after the establishment of the Israel, the miracle, the time of miracles will begin. The Jews will rule over the world, and all the other nations going will follow their orders. So they are, because the Messiah will have the magical means to control the reality, to make the marvels and miracles and so on. That was the main idea. But the Zionists, they were in a very particular situation because they have replaced Messiah by themselves. They declared themselves to be God or to be something, at least something, messenger of God. And they now, it is time to pay the credits, so to rule the other nations, to establish greater Israel and start to build third temple. Not after Messiah, but instead of Messiah. That has provoked a huge criticism from the other wing of the Judaism, of the traditional religious Jews inside of Israel, but mostly outside of Israel, who has said, no, you could not replace Messiah. You should wait. You should suffer this test of your real religiosity didn't end yet. It is the path of deception. You should not create Israel instead of waiting Messiah. So that is the huge split inside of Jewish tradition, Jewish people, in religious level and as well in the secular. And I think that Netanyahu now is acting as if He is Messiah, so he is leading the war against all the non-Judaic people around Promised Land. He tried to destroy Palestinian population, fight any regional opponent of the Zionist Israel, and that is religious and messianic elements of the behavior of Netanyahu. He is expecting the miraculous issue. His war and his action, his politics, is based on some combination of metaphysics, eschatology, and politics, as in the ancient biblical times. So for him, the war he leads for Netanyahu, it is Yehovah war, the war of God. So because the chosen people who has returned to the Israel, now they act as if they are God. So that provoked huge criticism from the other part of Judaism, but that explains what Zionism is. And now on this wave, they have attacked, destroyed completely Gaza. They tried to exterminate all the Palestinians, all the Goyim. They have attacked Lebanon. They have made the coup in Syria, and now they have bombed Iran, destroying their capacity to resist. So the explanation is not just rational. We need, in order to understand, and now the time is to blow up Mosque Al-Aqsa, that is built in the same place where the third temple should be constructed. So I think that is the main motivation. It is partly magic consciousness that is driver of Netanyahu. On the other hand, Iranians, they are motivated with something very similar, because after the revolution, Ayatollah Khomeini revolution in 1979, there was the idea that Shia world, that during many centuries Shia were under pressure of the Sunni. Sunni is dominating part of Islam, but when the Shia will restore their sovereignty and independence, that means that end time arrived, as according to Shia, the 12th Imam or hidden Imam Mahdi will appear, and he will lead them to fight Dajjal. Who is Dajjal? The liar. Dajjal is the fraud, liar. It is, in their opinion, the Western civilization without God, materialistic, atheistic, and Zionist. So there is as well mystical dimension of the Shiites in Iran, and why for them Israel matters so much in comparison with the other Islamic population who react against aggressivity of Israel, but not in this mystical, metaphysical sense. For Iranians, Israel is metaphysical, modern days Israel is metaphysical enemy, the fool, the absolute fool. And I think that and all that about Holy Land, as in the prophecies, so it is end time events that develop precisely around Armageddon Valley, around Israel, Palestine. So and that could not be something casual, because one eschatology, Zionist eschatology, is confronting now with the other Shiite eschatology. And American Protestants, radical Protestants, or Judeo-Christians, as they call themselves, they as well share this eschatological concern. According to their Scofield Bible.
Yeah, that's actually what I wanted to ask you about, because as you said, that there's a lot of evangelicals in the United States. You can look, you know, as an example, the interview, the now infamous interview between Tucker Carlson and Ted Cruz, where Ted Cruz says that, as a, you know, he supports Israel because as a Christian, it's stated in the Bible that you have a obligation to support the modern state of Israel. And, you know, it's interesting to see that in the United States, you have a strong Christian Zionist movement. But if you look at Orthodox Christian countries like Russia, like Serbia, like other, you know, members of the Orthodox world, there isn't really a Christian Zionist movement to speak of. So I wanted to ask you, you know, you're an Orthodox Christian. Do we Christians have a religious obligation to support Bibi Netanyahu in the modern state of Israel?
No, I think that is out of question for all kind of normal Christianity. Orthodox Church has no such idea at all. More than less, I think that the generally relation to Judaism is rather very negative in Orthodox Christianity, because there is the idea that there was a change, important change in the status of the chosen people after Christ. Jesus Christ was promised to Jews who were the chosen people, the real chosen people. So Jews were chosen. And as the final conclusion of their chosenness was the arrival among them of Savior and Son of God, Jesus Christ. After that, chosen people was transformed in the Christian church, based by Jews, apostles, and the church was open to the other peoples, and all the humanity was invited to become chosen people. And after that, no more chooseness of Israel. And more than that, those Jews who didn't accept Christ, they became damned and not chosen. So that was the totally opposite. So pre-Christian Jews were saint people, the chosen people. After, those Jews who didn't accept Christ were damned. So that is normal Christian attitude that was dominant one. That is still dominant in Christian Orthodoxy, Orthodox Church, that is still dominant in Catholicism, in spite of all declaration of political correctness.
And the American Pope that they have.
But at the same time, that is the majority of Protestants as well. But there was some special sect, starting from the 17th century, that started to promote British Israelism. The idea was that there will be a new Messiah, the first Messiah. Christ had, according to them, some limitations, and there will be new Messiah that will appear among Jews. And British people, Anglo-Saxons, are 10 tribes, lost tribes of Israel, and they should link with Jews in order to meet this promised Jewish Messiah. And a part of them, they followed, being Christian, being evangelical, they followed a wrong pseudo-Messiah Sabbatai Zevi that has appeared in the Turkey and after that converted in the Islam. Sabbatai Zvi, a very, very interesting idea. And he was the first Zionist because it was prohibited to Jews to return to Zionism, but Sabbatai Zevi declared himself Messiah and invited the Jews to return to Israel. That was the first founding father of old Zionism, pre-Zionist Zionism. This sect and among the radical Protestants in England, they have immigrated in the United States, and they started to promote their sectarian vision of this Jewish Messiah. And Scofield Bible was their instrument. Scofield referenced Bible was the edition of the sect, very, very popular, because there were commentaries of this dispensationalist, that is called dispensationalism, idea that Jewish Messiah will be the real Messiah for Christians as well. With such strange and sectarian commentaries, the Bible was distributed among American people without idea that that is about commentaries. So the biblical text was mixed with commentaries of Scofield Bible, and the idea that it is not just the credo of small evangelical sect, but it is something like normal biblical interpretation, was embedded in American Protestant culture. It is a relatively new phenomenon that is no more than 150 years, but it has made big influence, big impact on some religious leaders in the United States, absolute minority, including among the evangelicals and Protestants and so on. But they have influenced people like Lindsey Graham, like neocons, and they have mixed, they put together the Zionism and these Christian, Judeo-Christian tendency, proclaiming that the duty of the Protestants, or so-called Christians, should be to sacrifice everything for the Jewish Messiah. Who is Jewish Messiah? Zionists. They are. It is not about the expectation of the future. It is about the duty to act now. And Ted Cruz is very well, has very well explained that in his speech with Tucker Carlson. It is total heresy for Orthodox Christianity, for Catholicism, for major tendencies of Protestantism, but that is the declaration of faith of one radical Protestant sect that have developed a special eschatology based on that. And according to this eschatology, to the Scofield Bible and dispensationalism, Russia should play very negative part in the scenario of the end times, because Russia, according to them, is Gog country, and Gog will intervene, siding with the enemy of Israel in order to destroy the Jews. So why neocons want war with us or with Iran? They read the situation of Middle East and Israel, modern days Israel and Iran and Palestinians and Russia, in their religious way of reading Scofield's Bible. So we have very strange, weird mixture between postmodernity and pre-modernity, or some eschatological version of traditional religions that intersect in this quantum ontology of modern geopolitics. Something very ancient, very, very traditional, with some weird interpretations, and everything is put in the postmodern context. So I see no other way to interpret what is going on, because if we say it is all about oil, it is all about the market, it is all about technology or rivalry between some national states, that doesn't explain anything at all. So we need to change our grille de lecture, our way to read reality, because the classical form of expertises, of interpretations, they don't work anymore.
Well, Professor Dugin, I think we really managed to cover it all. We not only talked about Iran and Israel, we did it so through, I think, the sort of big picture ideological undercurrents, where we were able simultaneously to talk about apocalyptic Zionism, Shia eschatology, and postmodernism and Donald Trump. And so, I mean, you're the only one that would be able to connect all these dots together. So thank you so much for sharing it with our viewers.
Thank you.